our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I am a little disappointed. I obviously have to go to work tomorrow because we don't celebrate Thanksgiving here in this country while you guys are going to be slacking off.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Eating loads of food and, you know, falling asleep, presumably on the sofa like we do at Christmas.
You guys don't celebrate the tricking and then massacring of your native population?
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Been having some recording issues, and I'm recording on like 3 or 4 different formats right now to make sure one of them gets this, and I don't want the whole system to crash, so we're just going to jump right in.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 169 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Darius Austin and Chuck Anderson. Chuck, how you doing?
I am doing just fine. I'm trying to monitor the offseason and seeing what all happens here. Jason Castro's worth $24.5 million. I think you're worth
I just woke up. Jason Castro is worth $24.5 million.
To the Twins.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Darius, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, man. Although I am a little disappointed. I obviously have to go to work tomorrow because we don't celebrate Thanksgiving here in this country while you guys are going to be slacking off, eating loads of food and, you know, falling asleep, presumably on the sofa like we do at Christmas.
You guys don't celebrate the tricking and then massacring of your native population?
That is correct, yes.
Well, that sounds unfortunate. So.
Surprising, I know, but true.
Yes. I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving, but we thought we'd try to get an episode in for you guys prior to the holidays. That way, if you were kind of counting on a podcast to listen to over the weekend, you will still get that. Let's jump right in because we've been having some recording issues, and I'm recording on like 3 or 4 different formats right now to make sure one of them gets this. And I don't want the whole system to crash. So we're just going to jump right in. And let's talk about some moves. I didn't know that Jason Castro is going to sign with the Twins. So I don't have him on the list. We'll cover him next week, I guess, with Mike and Matt. But let's talk about the Astros real quick. Brian McCann gets traded to the Astros for a couple of prospects. And then Josh Reddick signs a deal worth, I believe, about $60 million or so with them to probably, I'm guessing, play left field. Chuck, what are your thoughts on these two players moving to Houston in terms of their fantasy value?
Well, Brian McCann has suffered kind of a slow, steady decline, especially when you factor in that people thought his numbers were going to jump when he went to Yankee Stadium. He's had over 1,500 career games, not including, like, I was surprised he only has 13 postseason games. But my point being is that I can't imagine that this move is good for his fantasy value because, as I've stated before on this podcast, I think Yankee Stadium is a launching pad. And as far as Josh Reddick is concerned, he's coming off his second worst OPS since 2010 with the highest batting average of his career at 281, which I think that's kind of an indictment in and of itself that he's never hit over 281. And he's got his lowest home run total since 2011. Now, this is kind of a better move for him power-wise because Oakland is such a hard place to hit home runs. But I still have a hard time getting excited now that he's getting a little bit older. So I don't think there's much to like in either one of these moves, actually.
Darius, what are your thoughts on these moves going to Houston?
Yeah, it's hard to get too excited about either. Like Chuck says, I think Brian McCann is a 20 home run hitter at a fairly shallow position. So, you know, as catchers go, he's fine, but I'm not expecting a huge amount out of him beyond that. And Reddick, I think, has the potential to be very good, but he has also become a platoon candidate against lefties in various stretches over the last few years, and I wonder how much time that they're going to give him against left-handed starters. So I worry just a little bit about the playing time there. The Astros do have quite a few options out there, and I think there's the potential for him maybe to sit a few times against the better lefties, certainly. So that hurts a little bit. But I think he'll be better than he was with the Dodgers. I know he had a really bad first month there and then seemed to come into his own a bit. So I'm more optimistic about Reddick, I think, but neither is a hugely exciting player to me.
Yeah, I think I'm the opposite. I'm more excited about McCann. Not that I'm extremely excited. He takes a little bit of a hit leaving Yankee Stadium, but I think there were a lot of people in the industry on social media after the trade were like, "Well, I'm done. I'm done buying on Brian McCann." You know, they were just saying they were completely out. I don't think his value takes the nosedive that some people in the industry do. If you look, I know his home away splits throughout his career at Yankee Stadium have been drastic, but last year they weren't. They were almost 50-50. He had 11 home runs at home, 9 on the road to complete his 20. I don't have any doubts that he's going to, you know, offer similar production, maybe a little bit of a step down from what we're what we're used to. But I think he's a 20 home run guy that, you know, should offer, you know, somewhat decent average at the position. And I think he is going to be just fine. And I think he may come at a huge discount because of the move. So McCann's a guy I will probably end up with in a number of leagues. Reddick, to me, is just the injury risk is too great for someone who isn't really that special. So to me, you know, he's a guy, he's just a guy that you get kind of mid-late round that now carries an injury risk. So for me, I'm completely out on Josh Reddick. Let's move on to another move. This one may not be fantasy relevant for a ton of people, but there are people who out there who play in holds leagues or play in NL only or deeper formats. So Brett Cecil signs a massive deal with the Cardinals to become, I guess, their left-handed guy out of the bullpen. Darius, what are your thoughts on Brett Cecil to St. Louis?
I think he's been a very good pitcher, really, over the last few years. I think the size of the deal is going to surprise quite a lot of people, and not many relievers get 4 years, certainly, and the $30 million is going to leap out at people as well. But he's become more than just a platoon guy over the last few years. He's much improved against right-handed batters, and 2016 he actually had pretty similar peripherals against both sides of the plate, so while I do think he'll be one of their primary options against lefties, I don't think that's going to be his only usage. So people who are looking for an increased number of innings out of him in hold leagues might be fairly pleased with him, I think. So overall, I think if you're on one of those deeper leagues, he might be one of those the better guys that you can pick up for essentially nothing at the end of a draft or in a reserve round, and he'll give you some pretty good innings, I reckon.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Brett Cecil?
I guess I really don't play in a league where a player like this is used, since I don't play in an NL-only league. I certainly think, you know, he's been one of those guys that's been very, very real-life baseball relevant. You know, in a very unsteady bullpen over the last couple of years for Toronto because of their starters not being able to pitch deep into games a lot of times, he's been really valuable. And I trust the Cardinals as far as they seem to have a very good idea of what they try to do in building a bullpen from year to year. So I, you know, if you're in a holds league, he's someone that I would definitely keep on your radar because these loogies are important in those kind of leagues sometimes, especially somebody who offers more than just loogie value and pitch to righties as well.
I love the move for St. Louis from a real-life perspective, and I like him from a deep league NL-only perspective. He'll be a guy that I think you can get fairly cheaply in NL-only auctions and drafts that will, you know, offer some really nice production. We're seeing one of the better pitchers, one of the pitchers who has shown pretty dominant stuff at times at the Major League level, moving from the American League to the National League, moving from one of the worst stadiums for pitchers to one of the best. You have to think that the huge home run rate, almost 1.5 per 9 home runs given up last season will drop considerably. I think if you're in a league, I think you're going to see maybe even in 15-team leagues where he's one of these kind of elite relievers that you can add to your team. And I think he'll be first in line for saves if something happens to O during the season. So I think he's definitely a guy you can handcuff in deeper formats. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about Andrew Cashner signing with the Rangers. Chuck, what are your thoughts on this move?
I'm going to be about as negative on this move as I've ever been about any move, really. 112 strikeouts, 60 walks, 9.7 hits per nine innings last year. The worst strikeout to bases on balls rate in his putrid career. He's never pitched in the American League before. There's no situation where I would own Andrew Cashner next year. I would rather take chances on guys like Matt Garza or Charlie Morton than take a chance on Cashner. I remember when everyone thought all he needed to do was stay healthy, and now the healthier he becomes, the worse he is.
Darius, are you as negative on Andrew Cashner?
I think I probably am, actually. It's kind of, there wasn't really anything redeemable about him last year. The control was terrible. The strikeouts were pretty bad relative to what he used to be, as Chuck mentioned. Texas is a bad place to go, and he hasn't really got much secondary stuff to speak of. So I can't see how he's going to be at all fantasy relevant unless the Rangers decide to move him to the bullpen, in which case him being sort of just about a two-pitch pitcher might be acceptable. And obviously they didn't pay a lot of money for him, so I'm sure they don't mind the risk. But as far as a fantasy starter goes, I couldn't be more out on Cashner.
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there. I think the only way he becomes useful is if he is moved to the bullpen. I can't imagine the move to Arlington Stadium from San Diego is going to benefit him any. I would have liked to see him end up in a place like Pittsburgh where he could work, with, some kind of premier pitching coaches and maybe get kind of turned around. But to me, I don't think he is fantasy viable in anything other than a 12-team AL only. And even in that case, I'd probably go venture towards someone else. That kind of wraps up the topics we've got in terms of players signing and being traded so far. So let's just jump right into a list of players I put together. All of these guys are coming off of disappointing years for one reason or another. Most of them are injuries. Some of them are just a down year. So my question to you guys are, is this the new norm or are these guys going to bounce back? Let's start with Zach Greinke. Darius, what are your thoughts on Greinke for next season?
I'm optimistic that he'll pull up a much more useful season than he did this year. He was always going to have a down year compared to his incredible 2015, but I certainly didn't expect it to be quite this bad. His peripherals kind of look basically the same as they did in 2013 when he was certainly a perfectly good pitcher and at least a number two, if not a back-end ace. But I think there was just a bit of bad luck. Arizona's obviously not as nice a place to pitch as Dodger Stadium, so that doesn't help. And I think the injuries did bother him a little bit as well. It's the first time he pitched under 170 innings since 2007. So he's been an incredibly durable guy, and I think they just interrupted his season a bit, and he didn't look quite right. But I think he's still a very smart pitcher. He's got a great range of pitches, which he can still control well. And I think overall, I like Greinke next year. I'm probably going to be looking to pick him up as a bit of a value in a few drafts from people scared off by 2016.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Zach Greinke for next year?
Well, I would be in agreement with Darius by and large. His home run rate did double from 2015, but surprisingly, he gave up more home runs on the road last year than at home. But his walk rate was really, really high at home, which I found to be odd. Like maybe he was sort of pitching away from contact more at home. You know, he's always been such a mental guy, very cerebral. I got to know his personality profile pretty well when he was in Milwaukee. And, you know, there was always questions. You know, he struggled with some forms of psychosis for lack of a better term, some real severe mental issues when he was in Kansas City.
Yeah, he had an anxiety disorder, a pretty severe anxiety disorder.
Yeah, and he's such a mental guy that I had a feeling in my head that last year was going to go either really good or pretty bad. But at the same point, I agree that the talent is still there. I think he's a worthwhile gamble. His higher elevated strikeout rates of the previous two seasons were always called into question by a lot of people, wondering if it was really for real. Last year, he took a step back in the strikeouts. Obviously, the other areas he struggled in that Darius spoke of. So I think he's worth a gamble at the right price. He's not somebody I'm going to reach for anywhere as close to where I was reaching for him the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that will rebound, though. And I was all bought in this year. I cited him as a very intelligent guy who really thinks about the game and really thinks about what he's going to go and do in each situation. I still believe he's that guy. I wonder if there are, you know, Darius, you were mentioned, or sorry, Chuck was mentioning, you know, the mental health issues that he was suffering with, especially in Kansas City. And, you know, he suffers from a pretty severe case of anxiety disorder. And I wonder if the change in scenery affected that. It was one of the reasons I thought he'd re-sign with the Dodgers, because he had found a home and found a place that was very comfortable for him. This was a guy who was almost out of baseball because of this early in his career. So I'm hoping that with more time in Arizona, he will feel more comfortable. He will rebound, being the intelligent guy that he is, and we will see a rebound to pre-2016 form. It may not be as great, you know, as we saw in 2015, like Darius said, but there's no reason to think that he can't get back to 2014 or 2013 Zach Greinke. And so I will be purchasing him in a number of leagues where his price has been depressed.
Well, curiously enough, the two NFBC style leagues that I've seen online, he's gone in the first four rounds in both of those leagues.
Wow. Okay. I don't think I would necessarily do that.
And so that's kind of why I tied in the question that I would like to see it at a bit of a discount now, even though, you know, I have some belief in him as well. The real question is does he have, if the ERA wasn't so good in 15, does he have that, you know, dominating strikeout stuff to be worth a gamble of needing him to rebound as well? I think that's what we're getting to. I don't hate the pick late in the fourth round of, you know, of a 15-team league, but at the same time, that's a little bit higher than I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, that's quite a bit higher. Well, I mean, maybe not quite a bit higher than I'm comfortable with. I just expected him to go a little bit lower than that. I just pulled up the draft results from the mock draft that I did, the too early mock draft, which, if you're interested, Alex Chamberlain of Fangraphs, who was in that draft, did a write-up on it, or did a couple write-ups on it on Rotographs. So if you're interested in that, it is available there. So I would encourage you to go check it out as I'm stalling for time and trying to find. It looks like he went outside of the top seven rounds in that draft. So, but I'm not quite finding exactly where he went.
I'm far more comfortable with that. I mean, even getting late fifth into the sixth round, I can see it. The pitching drop-off is real in these drafts. I mean, real. I know I've been speaking on it extensively on these podcasts, but Zach Greinke, because of his pedigree, is somebody that I can see is going to be, you'd think that he's going to fall, but all the pitching injuries in the middle of the, you know, the top of the first tier into the second tier are going to keep a guy like that, I think, mostly in the top five rounds.
Yeah, he went in the seventh round, pick 97th overall in our mock draft to Scott Bogman of the In This League podcast. Went right before Danny Salazar and Cole Hamels and Kyle Hendricks. you know, I think I would maybe quibble a little bit with the Salazar pick, but I think they're right in the same spot. But I would have him far ahead of the two pitchers I mentioned. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about Andrew McCutchen, who's been a perennial first-round pick for a number of years. You may have been able to get him outside of the first round last year, but just barely. I don't think that is going to be the case for 2017. Darius, what are your thoughts on Andrew McCutchen coming into next year?
I think there's a chance that he's actually a pretty good value next year. He was so much better in the second half than he was in the first, and he actually got back up to a fairly respectable 24 home runs. Certainly wasn't the first round Andrew McCutchen of old. I think you can forget about the steals. He went 6 for 13 on the base paths. I think that the speed is clearly dropping off. We've seen that over the last couple of years. And I think that might limit his batting average as well. He's been an above-average BABIP guy for quite a few years. But I think if his speed is going, then we can expect a few less of those infield hits and his speed getting him on base. So I certainly think that he can bounce back and... without injury, I think he was bothered by a thumb injury, in particular in the first half. I think he can put up a much better full season. And as you say, I don't think he'll be going just outside the first round. So I can see a bit of value here from McCutchen.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on McCutchen coming into next season?
Well, I started to research him expecting that I was going to be skeptical moving forward. You know, but his floor from last year, 24 home runs and 6 stolen bases, doesn't make him unplayable. And his numbers were so much better in the second half. His lowest monthly batting average after August was .280, which certainly is more than playable. His success rate stealing bases was far better in the second half. You know, his home run rate didn't really go up that much, but his walk rate and his OBP went up a lot in the second half. I found myself curiously in on a rebound from Andrew McCutchen when I looked at the numbers, and as I've hammered into oblivion on this podcast, I think outfield is got a severe drop off when you consider that you need to own 4 or 5 of them. So he's someone who I expect to own in multiple leagues next year.
Yeah, I don't expect to own him at all next season. And I wasn't in on him this year. The lack of speed, the decline in speed is extremely disturbing to me, because it makes him not special anymore. You know, what was special about Andrew McCutchen is you could get 20 to 25 home runs, 20 to 25, you know, and, you know, some years 30 stolen bases, with a fantastic OBP and a really nice average. And if Darius is right and that the lack of speed is going to affect his BABIP numbers and drag down his average, and he is a 24, you know, last year he was a 24-6 guy, so, you know, let's say he's 25-8, how special is that? Is that a third-round pick in 15-team leagues? Because that's where he went in our mock draft. And I don't think that is. I think there's guys with upside, with much higher upside than that, and without the injury history, because this doesn't even weigh in the fact that this is a guy who has been injured quite a bit throughout the last few years. Now, it hasn't cost him plate appearances, but they've been nagging stuff, and it's only a matter of time, because I believe he's had knee issues. It's a matter of time before maybe we do see a massive injury that does cost him a lot of time. I think his name value is going to continue to keep him as a third, a second, third, fourth round pick in 12 and 15 team leagues. And to me, that doesn't bake in enough profit potential. So I'm out on Andrew McCutchen.
Yeah, we're definitely in opposite corners on that, because I think if you get a full season of what he did in the second half, I think he's going to be better than a lot of outfielders who are going to get taken in front of him this year. And, you know, at the reduced cost, I like it. Like, I'm also expounding on where I think he's going to go, meaning, like, if he goes If he goes after George Springer, I like the value on McCutcheon better. If he goes after Ryan Braun, I like the value of McCutcheon a lot better. If he goes after JD Martinez, I like the value of McCutcheon a lot better. I do think there's spots where people will not reduce his cost enough, but I think there's going to be times where they do, and he's someone I would buy into in sort of those situations.
Chug, I mean, here's my only issue with what you're saying is, listen to these numbers. 20 home runs, 62 runs scored, 82 RBIs, 8 stolen bases with a .267 average. If you double Andrew McCutcheon's numbers from the second half, those are his numbers. That's not impressive. So, I mean, I understand he was good. If you look at his month-to-months, he was good in September and October. September and August. But, I mean, that's giving him credit against really bad pitching in September. And, you know, I mean, even if you just kind of extend out his August, those aren't good numbers. Especially in this power age, you know, who's to say that he didn't get the power boost everybody else did from the juice balls? We have to assume everybody got the same advantage. So, I mean, we could be talking about, if we go back, if the balls aren't juiced next year, that this guy is more of a 15 home run hitter that can only steal a handful of extra, or a handful of bases. I just think there is, there's a cliff that we're kind of eyeing, and the upside isn't as great as it used to be.
Well, like, again, we're in opposite corners. I see a 30-year-old guy who's been very athletic as a generality, and when we wrote off Joey Votto once he got into his early 30s, because of various reasons, he bounced back. I don't think MVP style talent diminishes as quickly as you would be projecting it to at this point. Is it feasible? Of course it is. I'm just saying that I don't see that low of a floor, and I see a lot more ceiling than you do.
I think his floor is somewhat safe, but to me, I just don't see the upside.
See, if he hit 305 and hit 32 home runs next year and stole 10 bases, that wouldn't stun me in any way, shape, or form.
Wait, how many home runs did you say?
In the 30 to 32 range.
Yeah, I mean, he's only hit more than 25 home runs once in his career.
Yeah.
So to me, that is where we have a disconnect, is I don't think the power potential is where you probably do. I mean, this is a guy who's had over 4,000 plate appearances over the course of the last 6 years. I think he's a guy that is a little beat up, and I don't think he is the player that he once was.
I can certainly see that. Poor Darius is hearing us go back and forth on this one. But at the same time, in recent years, whenever we've thought special talents, overall special baseball talents, when we've thought they were going to fade off into the abyss quickly, generally speaking, that hasn't happened. You know, Albert Pujols was written off how many years in a row? You know, the numbers may change. They may alter. They might not be the same person we thought they were going to be. And that's why I'm giving Andrew McCutcheon the benefit of the doubt, that I do think he's a special talent overall, and I do think that he can make adjustments. And it maybe, I'm overly aggressive on the batting average and the home runs going up. I agree with that. That maybe he is a 260 hitter, but he can get in the 30s in home runs. And in the middle of that lineup, and he's certainly going to play every day, and he's certainly counted on by an organization, I think there's enough value with the lack of outfield depth behind him to make him a potential value going forward.
I think Hanley Ramirez and Carlos Gomez would strongly disagree that the first round picks continue to retain value long term.
Hanley was good last year. I expect Carlos Gomez to be good next year.
Yeah, but I mean, how many years has it been since he was a first round pick? And I'm not saying McCutcheon is going to be undraftable. I'm saying you're not going to return the return on investment isn't there. And so I want someone who can potentially give me a greater return on investment as opposed to someone who, you know, I draft in the third round and gives me sixth round value.
So you would like Braun or JD Martinez or Springer more than McCutchen?
Springer is one that I'm probably odd out in this year as well, which hurts me to my core. Because I love George Springer and I love what he could bring, but the lack of speed to me, again, disturbing from a guy who and the lack of being able to steal a base without getting caught is kind of depresses his value for me. But yeah, no, JD Martinez, and depending on, you know, where he gets traded, because I think there's a chance he does get traded, Ryan Braun for sure is ahead of Andrew McCutchen for me.
Braun, you know, living through the last couple of years of nagging injuries with Braun and the limited plate appearances, etc., which I know is a concern for McCutchen as well. But McCutchen doesn't seem to have any chronic issues like, you know, the thumb is going to continually need maintenance.
Well, I think he's got chronic – doesn't he have chronic knee issues, chronic back problem? I mean, it hasn't kept him out. He's gotten – 600-plus plate appearances, and in a number of those seasons, 670, 660, 680. But there's always been some sort of nagging issue with him the last few years, where he's, you know, day-to-day, or he's playing through pain. And maybe he's a guy that just needs to go on a DL stint every once in a while and get completely healthy, and maybe that's the issue. But if he's going to continue to play through these nagging issues, I think that does hurt, especially his ability to steal bases.
Well, I'm curious if Darius would rather have Braun or McCutchen next year.
Darius, Braun or McCutchen next season?
Exactly the same spot. I think that's really close. I might be slightly more inclined to take Braun, but my expectation is also that he's going to go higher. That may be wrong, and maybe McCutchen's name is going to carry more weight, but I think I could see them in my personal rankings. They would probably be in the same round.
Yeah, and to your point, McCutchen and Braun went within three picks of each other in the mock draft that I did not too long ago. So let's move on. Let's talk about Chris Archer. I'll start with you this time, Chuck. What are your thoughts on Chris Archer coming into a potentially rebound season?
Well, I really suffered with Chris Archer last year. I mistakenly, because of a snafu in my draft listing last year, took Chris Archer over Corey Kluber in a draft last year. And I beat myself up about it the entire season that had happened. But when I looked at his numbers, I mean, you got to get past the 9-19 record, which, of course, wins are pretty unpredictable to begin with. But his 1.24 whip was really close to his 1.2 career whip. You know, he had six quality starts on the road after the All-Star break, even though he was putrid on the road overall last year. 233 strikeouts in 201 innings. You know, that really limits his floor of value if he's going to keep striking people out at that rate. I also really like that his walk rate was way down in the second half, and his ERA was down a run and a half in the second half. I really think this is the kind of guy that in this pitching market, in as much, you know, panic as there's going to be, or as much concern as there's going to be in that late first tier into the mid-second tier of pitching, he's a guy that I think I'm fully buying into as a rebound candidate.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Archer?
I think I might be a little bit out on Archer next year. I do like what Chuck said about his improvements in the second half. But I just worry the reliance on the slider is so extreme. And I think his inability to sort of develop that third pitch to complement his other two, and the fact that he was sort of so bad in that first half, really seemed to lose his control almost completely. That kind of waywardness from somebody who I might be drafting as a, maybe, you know, a high-end number two is a little concerning to me. So as always, these things depend on the value, but there are some warning signs there for me that make me think that maybe 2015 is the best that we're going to get out of him. And while the strikeouts are elite, I'm a little bit worried that people are going to see the potential there and they're going to draft him expecting a bit more, and that might put the price a bit too high for me.
I think that to me is my biggest issue is I'm worried. You know, Chris Archer is a guy I really like. He's very entertaining on social media. Another guy who's very intelligent and really thinks about kind of the advanced metrics, what he's doing in every situation as a pitcher. And so I like that. But at the same time, I don't think there's going to be much of a discount. And to me, that is where I have a concern. I think he is a guy that people are going to bank on as being a rebound candidate. And I am worried that, you know, if he doesn't rebound far enough, you're probably going to be paying around the same prices as you had to pay anyways last year for him. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And so he's a guy I'm probably going to be out on coming into 2017, just because I think the value isn't going to be commensurate with what his true value should have been coming into the season. Let's go ahead and talk about D. Gordon, who obviously he lost the majority of his season to a suspension because of performance-enhancing drugs. Chuck, where would you take D. Gordon coming into next season?
Justin, your audio is really, really cutting out on me now. Like, I'm just hearing bits and pieces. I don't know if Darius is hearing the same thing or if it's just me.
Weirdly, I had it a bit earlier, sort of when he was halfway through talking to you, and then it came back fine. I didn't get it just now, but I had it before.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to just wrap it up and hopefully try to figure out something better for when we record next time. So let me just kind of introduce the going out phase, and I'll work with what we got. We got about 40 minutes, so. All right, well, that is going to wrap us up. I know it's a little bit shorter episode than we usually do. Unfortunately, having some recording issues, and the Thanksgiving holiday is going to kind of temper what we can do today. But thank you for joining us. Chuck, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
I can be reached on Twitter at JustChuckingIt. I'm presently plotting and strategizing some pieces that I can share with both Banished to the Pen, which is an outlet that I know Darius helps contribute to as well, and something that I can help put on the site for some off-season baseball preview kind of stuff for Friends with Fantasy Benefits as well. So feel free to reach me on Twitter about any of the things that are going on with free agency. If you follow me on Twitter, I think you'll see that I'm very consistently contributing and trying to add to the ongoing dialogue about the baseball hot stove.
All right, and Darius, where can we reach? What are you working on?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I've actually just joined a score sheet league with Matt, our good friend Matt Thompson, who's obviously on the other podcast. So one of the things I've been thinking about is kind of a score sheet rookie type piece where I kind of look at the issues around joining a new league, the kind of things you have to do, getting used to the rules, figuring out you know, things about the other owners and the format. And I thought this would be kind of a good way into it. So I'm going to be working on that over the next couple of weeks. And as Chuck mentioned, we've also got lots of off-season and season preview stuff planned over at Banished to the Pen. And I've also got a piece about an incredible John Smoltz record in the works. So look out for all of that stuff.
Very nice. You can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Email me or the show, friendsfantasybenefits@gmail.com. Please give us a rate and review. It really helps us out, especially when it's a 5-star. That really kind of helps us get going, go up the iTunes ranks, and gets us some more listeners so we can continue to do this for you guys at little, or actually at no cost. So definitely do that for us over on iTunes. We've got a ton of podcasts coming up. We will be continuing to record throughout the end of the year and move into drafting season next year, which we've got a bunch of awesome things to discuss and talk about and give to you guys, because we are going to come full bore at you with daily podcasts starting on January 2nd. So hopefully you guys all enjoy and appreciate that. That is going to wrap us up. For Chuck and Darius, Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.